Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Albert Morales, and today's conversation is with Dr. Anthony Fauci, Director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. Also joining us today from IBM is Tom Romeo. Dr. Fauci, today it seems malaria has resurged with quite a vengeance, with half the world's population at risk for infection. Could you tell us more about NIAID's role in responding to the global effort against malaria? And specifically, what are some of the key initiatives, pharmacological or non-pharmacological, being pursued to combat this disease, and what progress is being made to date?
Well, the NIAID is the leading funder of basic biomedical research in malaria in the world. So we have a large responsibility that we take very seriously in doing both the fundamental and clinical research and understanding everything from the fundamental pathogenesis of malaria to the developing of a pipeline of drugs. We have some good drugs for malaria, particularly the artemisinin derivatives when used in combination. We do not have a malaria vaccine, and that's a very, very high priority to develop a malaria vaccine. You know, approximately a million people, about 890,000 people a year die of malaria. Most of them are African babies. So this is a great deal of disease burden and death that needs to be addressed. You can control malaria by a variety of other ways besides a vaccine. I mean, there's vector control, there's bed nets that are impregnated with insecticides, there's prophylaxis of pregnant women since they are very vulnerable to serious effects of malaria, there's the spraying of indoor huts, there's the use of prophylactic treatment. So there are many ways to control it, but as a research organization, NIAID is responsible for understanding everything from the pathogenesis or how the disease works, but importantly, in developing a pipeline of drugs and a vaccine.
So we spent some time in the last segment talking about viruses. I want to now move to the microbial world. Now, we may never truly eliminate the threat of infectious diseases as new pathogens emerge and older pathogens reemerge in sometimes very unpredictable ways. But what are some examples of other emerging, reemerging, or perhaps deliberately emerging diseases that pose a continuing threat to the global health? And how can we protect ourselves against these threats?
Well, you can protect. First of all, let me tell you examples of each so that the listener can understand what we're talking about. I tend to divide it up into three categories. One is a truly emerging disease, which means it's a disease, an infection that we have never had any experience with before. It's new to human civilization. The other is a re-emerging infection, one that we've had or some parts of the world have had exposure to or experience with, but it re-emerges in a new form that has a particular concern, that generates particular concern. And the other is deliberately emerging infections, such as those that relate to bioterrorism. So the mother of all emerging new infections that our generation has experience with is HIV/AIDS, because prior to the early 1980s, 1981, when it was first recognized, it was probably around for a decade or so before that, there was no experience with HIV/AIDS. So HIV/AIDS is truly a new emerging disease. Another emerging disease that we haven't had any experience before had much, much less of an impact than HIV/AIDS was SARS, which occurred a few years ago and then essentially burnt out by itself without needing any vaccine or therapy. It just public health measures controlled it and then it disappeared. A couple of examples of re-emerging infections is West Nile virus. West Nile virus was a problem in the Middle East and in Africa for centuries. And then in the late 1990s, it appeared in Long Island in New York, right near Kennedy Airport. Likely got came over either on a mosquito or a bird or a person, and then started to spread by mosquito spread. And now it's endemic in the United States. Another example of a re-emerging infection is extensively or multiple drug-resistant TB. TB has been around for centuries and for many, many years was very sensitive to the drugs we used. Then all of a sudden, through genetic mutations and maybe the improper use of certain drugs or the improper compliance on the part of people to taking the drugs, the resistant form of tuberculosis reemerge. So that's another example of a reemerging infection. And the typical example in our generation of deliberately released microbes is the anthrax spores that were released in letters through the postal system that resulted in 22 cases of anthrax and 5 deaths. So those are examples. We will never eliminate the emergence of new infections. That's just the evolutionary capability of microbes. Microbes will never eliminate the human species, and the human species will never eliminate all pathogens. There's kind of a balance that we have. The best we can do to protect ourselves against that is to be prepared and use the tools of biomedical research and public health for surveillance and moving quickly when we do see the emergence of a new infection like HIV/AIDS or SARS or multiple drug-resistant diseases.
Great. Dr. Fauci, an unfortunate reality of today's world is that biological weapons in the possession of a hostile state or terrorists are among the greatest security challenges to the United States. Have you been involved with efforts to combat bioterrorism, and what's gone into the development of effective medical countermeasures to mitigate illness, suffering, and death?
The NIH and NIAID has been very actively involved in the work to counter the possibility of there being deliberately released microbes. We look upon a deliberately released microbe as one of the spectrum of emerging and reemerging infectious diseases. Nature will likely be the worst bioterrorist because what nature gives us very often spreads very efficiently. Deliberately released microbes are handled, or the defense against them, the preparation, the public health and biomedical research preparation against these is extraordinarily similar to what we do to prepare against a naturally emerging infection. Good surveillance, good diagnostics, molecular capability to identify what it is, the developing of new classes of antimicrobials, antivirals, or what have you, the development of different platforms for vaccines so that we can make a vaccine rather rapidly. We have done that and continue to do that with diseases and microbes that we know have a threat because of history. For example, the Soviet Union was stockpiling anthrax and smallpox and many of the hemorrhagic fevers. So we have programs now that develop. They've dismantled them, but that doesn't mean that other terrorists would not be doing them. So we have a countermeasures in the form of vaccines, diagnostics, and therapeutics.
Could you tell us about NIAID's efforts in strengthening the physical as well as the intellectual infrastructure necessary to translate basic research discoveries into effective prevention and treatment strategies? Specifically, how does strengthening and expanding the national network of vaccine and treatment evaluation networks and the establishment of 6 centers of excellence for influenza research and surveillance factor into this effort?
Well, I think you used the right words. There's physical and there's intellectual infrastructure. We have networks for HIV prevention, for HIV therapy, for HIV vaccine. We have a vaccine and treatment evaluation units for other viruses and other microbes, particularly influenza. We have a variety of networks for emerging and reemerging infectious diseases. So you have to have the physical infrastructure, the equipment, and the resources to go into combating these emerging and reemerging infections. But importantly, as important as the physical infrastructure is the intellectual infrastructure. You have to keep training new young people to get involved in the field. We've got to keep a pipeline of people who have new ideas. Young people have a lot of great ideas that people who are experienced are maybe able to recognize them as good ideas, but there's something about getting fresh new blood into a field that is very healthy for the field. So we have got to continue to train people and continue to support the biomedical research endeavor with resources.
Autoimmune disease, allergenic diseases, asthma, and other immune-mediated disorders are significant causes of chronic disease and disability in our country. Could you tell us about NIAID's research efforts in immunology and immune-mediated diseases? What are some of the advances in our understanding of the mechanics underlying these diseases and in the development of strategies to detect, prevent, and treat them?
I think the answer to that question relates very much to the relationship between fundamental basic research and the application of that research. The NIAID is responsible in large part, not exclusively, but in large part, with studying the intricacies of the immune system. And the immune system is the body's protective mechanism, which when it works right, it protects you against infections, against certain cancers, against outside threats. When it goes awry, then you get immune-mediated diseases, the most common of which are hypersensitivity diseases or autoimmune diseases in which the body's immune system starts to attack its own tissues. We see that with rheumatological diseases like rheumatoid arthritis, systemic lupus erythematosus. We see it in transplantation rejection. We see it in asthma when you respond to an outside antigen in a very inappropriate manner that causes inflammation and sometimes symptoms and damage to tissues. We at NIAID study the intricacies of the immune system, particularly how the immune system is regulated. Once you know how it's regulated, then you could develop interventions in the form of drugs to modulate that to treat and prevent diseases that are of immune-mediated nature.
Going back to vaccinology, how has the application of new scientific breakthroughs such as biotechnology or genomics transformed the way vaccinology is performed? And to what extent does the health information technology assist in these efforts?
Well, we have seen over the past few decades an explosion in the technology of genomics. Our ability to sequence microbes years ago, not too many years ago, to sequence a single microbe would often take a year or so. We can do it in hours now, less than a day. So you can have a library of information, and that's you get genomics, and then you get informatics, and then proteomics, and you could do all kinds of things, words that people are not used to hearing, which means that in a very rapid fashion, you can get the molecular makeup of a microbe. You could understand the vulnerable points in the gene of that microbe that codes for certain proteins that's responsible for pathogenesis, things that are susceptible to therapeutic intervention, areas of the genome that code for proteins that are important for vaccines. So the genomic revolution has had a major positive impact on our ability to develop vaccines.
So what is the value of pursuing this type of research within a collaborative framework, or would the traditional investigator-initiated mechanisms work just as well or possibly even better?
Well, investigator-initiated mechanisms are critical to advancing science. The new idea, once the new idea comes, very often, because of the advances in technology, you need what's called big science, teams of people with different areas of expertise working together for the completion of a product. That product could be a drug, it could be a vaccine, it could be anything that is helpful to the health of mankind. But we will never be able to do without the light bulb going off in someone's head about a particular idea. And that's what we call the investigator-initiated approach. But that can work in a very synergistic way with the what we call bigger science or collaborative science.
What does the future hold for the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases? We will ask Dr. Anthony Fauci, its director, to share with us when the conversation about healthcare continues on the Business of Government Hour.